I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. I hope this finds you well and healthy and safe wherever you're listening to this. You know, it's pouring, like pouring rain outside my place right now. It's just coming down, and you know, it's that sort of somber rain feeling that invites you to stay inside, which of course is a necessity currently. I was reading a friend actually just mentioned to me, you know, Anne Frank stayed inside a space for over 700 days and we're struggling with 3 weeks. And I was thinking, wow, when you put that in perspective, that's pretty wild. You know, I said in the last episode that we don't like being uncomfortable. Like, you know, you think of the same, we don't like when things are hard, which is, I want to separate hard from unhealthy because that's different. When things are challenging versus toxic, right? Because I was thinking, like, isn't it fascinating that as soon as something becomes challenging or uncomfortable, we leave a relationship, we leave a thing, we don't finish things, we don't see them through. And this is the same skill that's being invited of us, to see this through, to not see that you're having to do that. Because of course, that's the language that the mind goes into. I have to stay inside. And then the little tantrum child in us is like, I don't want to stay inside. I'm going to show you. I'm going to sneak out. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But this is really inviting us that we aren't having to. We're choosing to. We're choosing to for our own health, for other people's health. And when this all passes by, as with everything, this too shall pass. And when it does, I hope that we adopt. I have one of my best friends, Marty. We were roommates for a long time. I remember he had this great idea. It was 1 year where he said, let's do everything that was fun when we were five for the next year. So, you know, seemingly when the rain would pour, we'd go jump in puddles and have fun. And we'd do this with groups of friends. We'd go tobogganing, or depending where you live, sledding. We'd go and go climb playgrounds, go have fun, go do all the things that are about actually getting back into the curious eyes of a child, to get back into the curious mind and getting back into play. Think about how little we allow ourselves to play as adults. But play is so important. Play is such a key part of our ability to stay in the space of wonder. And what a beautiful way to face the world, to play with it, to play, to enjoy life. And I believe that we are one of the beautiful byproducts of this experience is that we are being invited into introspection and also into the value of a moment, the value of our lives. I mentioned that on the last podcast, that ultimately we're facing the truth of our mortality, but it's not imminent, you know, it's like this thing we can't predict. And I think that's the part that is fascinating about this experience is it's not that you don't want to feel fear right now, because we're all going to feel fear. And fear is an important emotion because it mobilizes us. It mobilizes other emotions like anger and sadness and grief. Just it's about experiencing the fear and observing the fear, not letting the fear choose for you. Like, you can be in fear. And I'm sure right now, you know, I was reading some interesting things about couples getting divorced or like going through a lot of struggles right now, that the Reddit and relationship forums are flooded with questions like, how do I not lose my goddamn mind when I'm in such close quarters? And I think that's a real interesting thing is I heard two people discussing it, and one saying my relationship is better than it's ever been, and the other person saying my relationship is fucking falling apart. And the interesting thing about both those people is, one, the first person, their relationship was healthy going into the spatial privacy. That's what I was calling it, instead of social isolation, spatial privacy by choice. Their relationship was healthy prior to that. And the other person, their relationship was really struggling. And so this is going to be a magnifying glass to those things. You're in a super compressor. But you also have to remember your boundaries are more important now than they've ever been. They're more important to say, I can't hang out with you, because your health literally depends on it. And also to say to your partner or your roommate or your parent or your kid or whatever, depending on the age of the kid. So please take that. Don't get into the gray of that. Oh, if my kids do, I can't do this. Yeah, I get that. Let's process this from a non-reactive space. That you can say, I need some space right now. I need to go into my room and I don't want to be disturbed for a couple hours. You have to ask for those things. But here's the thing I want us all to be mindful of. Your boundaries currently, your health literally depends on it, and the people around you's health and the people you love. Now get this. This is because of a virus, right? Because of potentially getting COVID. Toxic people that need boundaries are also a virus. So what you're learning is that your health is always affected if you don't have boundaries. Your health is always affected. I hope that we learn through this, that we had to learn boundaries because our health depended on it, that we're like, I actually can't hang out. I don't care about, like, your feelings matter to me, but they don't matter more than my health. That is the exact same truth about all boundaries. So I hope that that sits with you, that your health is always affected when you don't have boundaries. So that's my PSA of the day. And speaking of information, because it's information overload about, and it's hard to get clear information about what's actually happening. Like, what is actually happening? What is the truth about coronavirus? And so I brought on one of my best friends, Dr. Rob Graham. He's a physician who practices in New York. He has FreshMed NYC with his wife, Julie, and they're just incredible humans. And I had the absolute pleasure of having Rob on the podcast. I had him on an Instagram live. I recorded it, took the audio, bringing it on here for you guys, because it was so incredible to hear him speak about the truth of all of this. Like, how do you catch it? Do you stay immune? What is, why do we need to socially isolate, as in choose to spatially, to be private spatially? I like that. The language is important, because as soon as you say social isolation, you stimulate the mind goes, I'm going to be isolated and I'm not going to have social contact, as opposed to the empowering view. And you might think it doesn't matter. The language doesn't matter. Language always matters. Your words create your world. language literally creates your world and also can affect biological cascade within yourself. How you see the world is how you see the world. And you know, when they, I think it's Wayne Dyer says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So let's be mindful of the way we're looking at things. So Dr. Rob Graham, he's on, he's got, you can go check out his stuff at freshmednyc.com. And he's going to talk about at the very end, just about more info about his work and where you can find more of that info. And that's at freshmedu.com. So freshmedu, the letter.com. Anyways, without further ado, I want you guys to get this info. It's beautiful. He's wonderful. He's one of the most thoughtful, most brilliant humans. And he's so down to earth and authentic and real. And that's why I love him. And I love you guys. Stay healthy, stay safe, and have the best day ever. What's up, my friends? All right, let's do this.
My name is Rob Graham, born and raised in New York.
I am
locked up in my house, adhering to the guidelines that we all should be adhering to. Stay home. So I'll give you a little bit of background. So I am a Harvard-trained physician, board certified in both internal medicine and integrative holistic medicine. And when I obtained my fellowship in integrative medicine, I also got a master's in public health from the Harvard School of Public Health. And so for the past, say, 15 years, I've been trying to take care of patients one-on-one. And some of you have come to see me in my offices, FreshMed NYC in New York, where I take care of patients like any other doc, one-on-one, but particularly focusing on gut health, which Mark would love to talk about this too, because it's so important. Two-thirds of our immune system is in our gut. So we can talk about that. What could people do today? And lately, because of this coronavirus epidemic, I've been asked by our city councils and other public officials in New York to give my two cents on, you know, what we should be doing from a public health point of view, what you can be doing for your own health and well-being. After listening to my wife, who said, hey, Rob, you have to transform your practice to offer access, about a week before this whole thing broke out, as I was starting to see what was happening out in China, I converted my entire practice into telemedicine or telehealth. So
right, that means like this, video.
Yeah, it's just like this. It's like Facebook Live, Instagram Live, but where we use a certain platform where HIPAA, you know, patient protect information that patients want to divulge are protected via this platform. And so, but, you know, in fact, the president, our lovely president here, has decided to he's done a couple of good things, not many, but he's done a couple of good things, like prevent HIPAA from being an obstacle in going on Facebook Live or using Zoom for our patients to be in touch with us. So it's an evolving dynamic time, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, there's definitely a lot of misinformation because so many people are getting their information from, I mean, unfortunately, from news sources that tend, you know, as they say, if it bleeds, it leads. And so people understand, because I think there's a lot of misinformation. Certainly I've read it, explored it, looked at it, about it being, you know, it's a regular flu, but it's not a regular flu. It's like a flu jacked up on contagion, isn't it?
Yeah, no doubt. So the really tough part about it, and probably 80% of my phone calls, is, you know, kind of addressing the pandemic of fear and panic. Obviously, there is a pandemic going on called COVID, but there's also a pandemic of panic and fear and anxiety that is real. And part of the problem is that this virus, which is a novel virus, which many people don't understand what novel just means new. You know, the human race has not seen this before. We have seen different types of COVID, coronaviruses, but this is a new one. And so therefore, we don't know, our body doesn't know how to respond to it. So it's kind of an interesting, unfortunate, real dilemma that's happening right now. Yes. So this is a virus, just like the flu is a virus. And that's really important thing to consider, because just dispelling some myths right now is that an antibiotic typically doesn't work for a viral infection. And so patients are calling about, hey, I need an antibiotic. And in fact, understanding how viruses work, antibiotics don't have a role in a viral disease. The problem here is that we have COVID going on. We have the flu season going on. And right now, particularly in New York,
a lot of stuff.
We have allergies. You know, we have the beautiful springtime, which unfortunately some of us, like in New York, are locked up in their apartment, haven't had the opportunity to go out that much. And so what's happening is that you have an explosion of pollen and allergens right now, and it's causing the similar symptoms between COVID, flu, and straight up allergies. And the other thing, you can get just a common cold, you know, because again, what breeds colds, a common cold? Close-knit environment. So if you haven't isolated yourself, you should be doing that. But the greatest predictor of catching a cold is being among other people. And so, again, similar colds, viral infections, upper respiratory infections, asthma is being triggered now. Allergies are triggering asthma. So it is like it's just like the worst time for this thing to happen.
Yeah, and I'm reading a comment on there that it says any truth to the rumors of it being bioengineered. You know, I to that question, I'm sort of like, that doesn't matter yet.
Right.
Like regardless of whether that's true or not, it doesn't matter yet. Because that's it, like, doesn't matter about the source.
Exactly.
Let's right now we gotta fix it first.
Right, exactly. We can start digging, and I think a lot of the public health officials are going to be start doing that once we listen, the faucet is running, right? We got to turn off the faucet, right? And what happened, we got to figure out that later. Because right now, you know, when you think about public health, there's a couple of things that I'd just like to bring up. Because one of the things that we are focusing on, particularly here in New York, the genie is out of the bottle, right? And so you can't get it back in. And so right now, what we have to do is what they call mitigation and containment. And so that what that means is that you have to get yourself away from other people that are potentially contagious. That's why that whole, you know, we talked about this before, Mark. Social distancing is really physical distancing because
spatial privacy. That's what I've been calling it.
Even better,
call it spatial privacy because words matter so much that when I hear people hear like social distancing or social isolation, it like triggers that part of the human mind that's afraid that you won't have other people around, which is scary.
It is scary. And I think this is such a wonderful platform. And I just want to tell you, you know, my parents, my mom is 81 and my dad is 78. Yes, he married, you know, she married someone younger.
Well done. That was pioneering back in those days. You're a product of a rebel. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, what's interesting about them is that they never used FaceTime.
And oh, so yeah, that's fair, yeah.
I called my dad and I said, Dad, you know that button right there that says FaceTime? Hit it. And Mark, it was like the light bulb blew, you know, he was like, oh, man, I love this shit. I'm never going to be just calling you. I want to see you. And it's really a wonderful time, you know. Yeah. It's a great time to really connect with those that, you know, you often think of. And at this point, right, when we are social distancing or physical distancing, just reach out, man. You know, don't think about, I should reach out to Mark. Just call Mark or call that person at this point, because we're all in the same spot. We're all home.
Yeah, we're and Canada just released a bunch of support for people who are affected by the pandemic, small businesses, individuals who are unemployed. One of the questions that I saw in there that I agree, I wanted to know more too, because I think there just needs to be more, people keep telling me not to touch my face. I live by myself.
I know.
It doesn't matter. I'm not going to get it. I haven't been around anyone. I'm isolated. Yeah. So I'm wondering, and this is the only touch I get. So this is my eroticism. Okay. So just let me have it. But yeah, so I'm in terms of, cause I'm in the mountains, so I can go for a walk and I see other people and they go to the other side of the street. For people who are in a city like New York or who are in Denver or in Canada, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Where laws permit, can you go for a walk outside? That's what people are asking. Yeah.
Yes.
So you just have to stay at a distance, right?
Yeah. So I'm just going to keep it real with all you guys. I live on a 26th floor in Manhattan. I'm about four blocks away from Central Park, probably one of the greatest parks in the world.
It is a great park.
Yeah. And it's like a refuge. But, you know, one of the things that I'm mostly concerned about is taking the elevator down, right? I got to take 26 floors. I'm concerned about, you know, being exposed to someone on the elevator. And so one of the things, particularly in New York, now this is really important too. This will affect everyone. You know, there's about 160 countries that have been affected by it. Now, a virus like this, it's really important to think about what's happened initially in America here in Seattle. That's what we call a cluster. Right. So there was a massive influx of this virus, particularly in a vulnerable population in a nursing home. And so it was catches like wildfire. right? And so that's why the vulnerable are particularly the elderly with chronic diseases, and who are typically in nursing homes, elderly with chronic diseases, right?
Yeah. And so that's all the like most sensitive people. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where that thing just blew up like that. And unfortunately, you know, killed a lot of people.
That's in Vancouver too. It's been in 5 nursing homes.
Yeah. And so that's really a big concern right now, because, you know, us healthcare workers are asked to go out. And that's something too that's really important, what I want to talk about. But so the cluster in Seattle seems to be somewhat contained, right?
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah, with a couple of people kind of still presenting with diseases, the coronavirus. But in New York, what happened is that there wasn't enough social distancing in the beginning. And as you know, it's a mecca, right? Everyone
you
comes rebel, to New York.
You rebels. Yeah. You rebels. Strong opinions, poor social distancing behaviors.
I know. Freedom. That's what we want, freedom. Right? Yeah. And that's what's the tough part about this whole thing, because there is a cohort of people in America that believes that it's not up to the government. We're a free society, and the government should be telling us what to do. I think that's bullshit. I think, you know, public health trumps everything. And so we, as a site where the initial migration, again, Trump did one thing, right? He actually closed travel from China immediately, which was, I think, a really important thing to contain mitigation. But after that, I don't think he's done anything, right? The other thing is that once Italy started blowing up, again, we were an entry point, and we just didn't do the social isolation or social distancing that we did. And that's why it's everywhere in New York. You know, we have, I think, 60% of, I saw last night, 60% of all new cases are here in New York City.
60%?
Yeah, 57% last night.
How many people live in New York City, like, you know, in the boroughs?
I think 8 million coming in out of Manhattan a day, you know, at the height.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, so that's why, going back to your point, Mark, you know, if in New York, stay home. Just stay home as much as you possibly can. You can go out, but this is not a time that, you know, you can gather. And I know we talked about it this weekend with your friends, Mark. You know, I wish we could, but at this point, because this is such a hot spot right now, social distancing, six feet apart is really important. And if you don't have to be out, don't go out.
So for me, I didn't go to like Costco and all the stores to go buy everything. And all you fucking assholes who went and bought like all the rubber gloves and all the disinfectant, I hope your ass got pulled off Amazon so you can make money off it. But I have no hand sanitizer. I have soap, but I have no hand sanitizer. I got no face mask. There's no rubber gloves. I've got none of these things. I haven't been out, and the place where I ordered groceries from, it's like a week out, of course, you know, and when I pick it up, they wear a single use set of gloves, put it in my car, and they take off. Great. So, but they, you know, obviously I can't be certain of the groceries and all that kind of stuff, but what does someone like myself do then? Because I'm sure there's lots of people, because there's a couple dickheads who thought that they'd make a lot of money off a pandemic. And then, you know, they bought all the toilet paper. I don't understand that part, because what are you going to just sit at home and shit? Are you shit more when you're at home by yourself? I didn't get that one. But anyways, my point is, what do I do now?
Yeah. So just talking about your last point about shitting, actually, diarrhea is one of the symptoms of coronavirus.
Oh, yeah. I heard that. That's a recent ad, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So the first three things, I just want to talk about symptoms really quick. Fever is probably the most important. About 87% of all cases have a fever that doesn't go away, does respond to Tylenol, not ibuprofen. The studies on ibuprofen or Advil are still somewhat mixed. So if you are having a fever, I would recommend taking Tylenol. The other thing that's really important is cough, non-productive cough, typically dry cough. And the last thing is respiratory symptoms. Shortness of breath, difficulty breathing. A couple of patients that I have seen said that it just feels like it's a tightness. And I don't have asthma. That's the kind of story I hear, right? And so those are like the three top symptoms. The other real big problem is exactly what you're talking about, is that if you go out, the whole idea is to limit contact with surfaces, because more and more data is coming out, because the nature of this virus, it's called a respiratory droplet virus, as opposed to an airborne virus. So that's good news, right? Because what happens is that with a respiratory droplet virus, you catch it through sneezing, coughing, right? And then someone else touches that and then touches their face, just like you are right now, Mark. Yeah. And so what I tell people to do is that, Yeah, I know. What I tell people, if you have to go out and get some groceries, right? Again, I tell what I do. I go out. If I have gloves and I'm running out of gloves, I will put gloves on. I'll go get the stuff I need to do, throw those gloves out. I also bring my own bags because in plastic, they're saying that it can last anywhere between 2 to 2 days, the virus.
Two days. It can last up to
on it. Yeah. And so that's where the whole hand washing is really, really important. And, you know, like you said, the people, you know, hoarded alcohol and sani wipes and whatever you call that.
Shit, I can't find that stuff anywhere.
I know. But, you know, warm, hot soap water is probably the most important thing to do. And then if you think you wash your hands enough, you haven't washed your hands enough. Right? Because you got to wash it every single time you touch some other surface.
And for people that don't know, Dr. Rob Graham's Instagram is FreshMedNYC. So, Rob, why is it that some people have no symptoms? So that happens, you know, quite a bit. So, mm-hmm. you know, because I think it's in South Korea, they test so many people that they were testing everybody regardless of symptoms. And then they right. found that all these young people who are out fucking partying are like out spreading the freaking. I saw people playing basketball a couple weeks ago, so at least they're adhering to the rule now. But they were passing corona around with the ball. And I was just thinking to myself, like, it's so easy to be the bridge between someone who doesn't know they have it and someone's grandma. That's what people don't realize is like, yeah, you might not be around someone, but you could touch something. And then all of a sudden someone touches that and then their grandma dies. So why is it that some people are symptomless?
So it goes back to the whole premise of microbiology and virology. And I'll just talk about that really quick. And so things need something else to grow on. Right. And so if you remember, like in elementary school and in high school, this notion of petri dishes, right? You take a bacteria and you put it on a dish and you see what grows. And that's what we all are, right? And it's all defined by your immune system. And there's other factors, but predominantly your immune system. And so if you have a strong immune system, you probably will be able to counteract the effects of a viral infection. The good news about this virus is interesting. It's very infective, but it's not a really strong virus.
And so it gets killed by fairly strong immune systems?
Yeah, exactly. And it's called the denatured RNA. It's an RNA virus, which in fact, by definition, it's held very loosely. And so with a strong immune system, it can battle it. And so therefore, that's why people who tend to be younger are asymptomatic. That means they have the virus.
But they don't even have a symptom.
They don't have a symptom. And that's where the dangerous part goes into play.
Because they don't know that they're hugging mom and dad and they're hugging grandma or whatever.
And actually, I don't know if you saw those pictures. And it was just like I saw it coming when they closed travel restrictions, you know, and you started seeing people hoard in customs area. Like, I don't know if you saw that pictures of people coming from Italy because they came within 72 hours from Italy and around the world into New York. And it was lines and lines of thousands of people where we're promoting social distancing, but now they're in lines.
Yeah,
they can't do anything. And that's where I think it all blew up. Again, the symptoms can be totally asymptomatic. They typically start anywhere between 2 to 14 days after initial exposure. And so you're cool hanging out, doing your thing. And then, and that's what we saw in New York, right? Just last weekend, there were people in a park. And a good friend of mine, Ted, he is a volunteer park ranger in Central Park. And he called me and he was like, Rob, you should see how many people are out there. And they're gathering.
Wow. Does he ride the horse on Home Alone where they chase? No, it's not like that.
No, it's a mouse. He's not a mouse.
Canadian, right? I'm like, did he have weird red pants on? So at least we're seeing that, I think, reduce. And I think for people who are watching this, I get the part that is like, especially for the response to 9/11, especially in New York, was you will not take our freedom. You will not make fear, make it so we don't live our lives. But the hard part with that is like, if you see that you are being forced to go into your home rather than choose to go into your home, like you can instantly say like, yeah, it's a rule, but I'm going to choose to stay in my house. And then it becomes your own choice, which I think is important for people who are rebels, quote unquote. But the other side of it, as you were talking about the flattening of the curve, is if we can all stay isolated and not transfer it to each other, then what happens is
the virus stops spreading. So it essentially doesn't allow it to stay alive within the system, right?
Well, you just can't pass it.
Exactly. Right? But we go long enough that 14 days that probably am, because when most people are going like, well, how fucking long is this going to be? And I'm sure there's many models of that. Mm-hmm. I was reading a really interesting article that was saying never in the forecasting of the pandemics for models and war models, they call them, in the US, did they ever imagine that they'd have a problem with testing? That was never a part of it, because I guess that the way that the US adopted testing was real horrible. Is that correct? That
now?
Yeah, for this, it was just not even a complete disaster.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, if you think about how, just putting my public health hat on, right?
Really, yeah.
And so what's happened is that the greatest, you know, pandemic or epidemic that happens every year is what they call the flu. And, you know, the flu is real. You know, people think like, oh, this coronavirus is killing, you know, I don't even know what the numbers are at this point, but.
I think it's, what is it? It depends on the country, of course, because we're not like, because you go to South Korea and they tested so many more people. So the percentage of death of the number of people is 0.5%, I believe, in South Korea. But then you go to Italy and it's like, I think up to 4%, which is pretty nuts.
So what you're talking about is the denominator. We don't know what the denominator is right now, right? Because we're still testing. And the issue was that all epidemics that happened prior to this thing was really kind of based upon the flu model. And in fact, the flu in the U.S. still kills about 50,000 people each year. 50,000.
Yeah, we don't really realize that. Hey, but again, so for clarity for people, generally the virus gets people who have lots of comorbidities. So lots of other factors, diseases, those comorbidities are what? Respiratory.
Diabetes.
So asthma, diabetes, type 1 and 2, any type. Heart disease. I would imagine those are all linked to then lack of exercise, smoking,
obesity.
Yeah. So it's that like, so then if those people get it, and that's why it's really, crushing, old folks' homes, is then it turns into an infection. Is that right? You were telling me
that
before.
Exactly. So it allows the virus to settle somewhere and then start replicating, you know. So that's the problem with the whole notion of testing. The other problem is that we just didn't get our shit together. You know, we had enough time to mobilize a testing, a strategy. That's what problem. I just got to stop.
Yeah.
The problem we have right now, right, is that it's go back to the old adage that we're only as strong as our weakest link. And the problem we have in U.S. particularly is that we have a weak, broken, antiquated public health system. And so when shit went down, we had nothing. We had no strategy at that point. And we're kind of trying to make it happen as it's occurring. And so that never works. That's never a successful preventive strategy, right? Because now we're just trying to scramble to figure out something. And so that testing wasn't ever meant to be this kind of expansive. And so now we're just trying to catch up, because the way the flu tests went out, we have a pretty good strategy for that. And in fact, that's one of the things that we're telling patients to do. Go to an urgent care and get tested for flu as well, because we just can't forget that corona is the only thing that's killing people, because there will be tens of thousands of people dying of just a straight up flu, the flu.
It's interesting that sort of now that awareness of what you're saying, because this has become so magnified that I think, what is the percentage of death from the regular flu?
About 1%. It was at some point less than 1%, right?
And this is a little more.
Yeah. So this was initially three times. And then each of it's changing, because a lot of the preliminary data that came out of China and Italy, it was old people. People with chronic diseases, right?
Yeah.
But now we're starting to see that about 40% of the people in our ICUs are people less than 40 years of age.
Wow.
40% of people with coronavirus in our ICUs are less than 40 years of age. So
they're young.
What we're seeing in Italy and China is totally different than what we're seeing here in the U.S.
I wonder why that is. Do the younger people, is it due to more comorbidities in those younger people? Because I would imagine there is... because the U.S. has a much higher rate of obesity and just like a general, compared to other countries, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, going back to your initial point, Mark, we'll figure out why this is happening and why guys have 50% increased mortality when they get COVID. By the way,
men do.
Men do. 50% wow. increased risk of death with COVID if you're a man. And again, that probably goes wow. back to a lot of the, you know, lifestyle behaviors that certain men do.
It's the patriarchy killer. That's what's
exactly. I just got to also say a couple of things because, you know, as a doc, I've been doing this for about 20 years. And I have a couple of beefs that I like to share. Because this is please. Really what I'm seeing in New York City. And it really pisses me off. Yes. So, and part of it is that I'm waking up to this kind of phone calls from patients. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things. So our broken public health care system, it's really kind of highlighting how important health care is, which leads to the point that in the U.S., right, our health insurance is so tied to our jobs, and now we have no jobs, and now we have no health insurance, and now we don't have a public option or any sort of health reform, which brings me to one beef I have. I had a patient who is 72 years old, who's a silver sneakers, which basically means that he teaches older people how to exercise in a YMCA. Mm, She lost her job.
Oh, wow.
And then she has mild asthma. She can't get prescription coverage because she lost her job for an asthma medication. Again, that's a big problem, right? So now people who had jobs, lost their jobs, don't have access to medications or healthcare. So in the U.S., 80 million people are without healthcare. And now that's just blown up, right? So now we have a lot of people without a job, therefore no healthcare, number one. Number two, I have a patient who has, I've known her for about 25 years. She has lupus. Lupus is a rheumatoid problem. That the miracle drug for someone with lupus to put them in remission is called Plaquenil, hydroxychloroquine, which you're hearing a lot now. It's a lifesaver for someone with lupus. We have stockpiled it. The government has stockpiled it, and people have been hoarding it. This woman called me in the morning two days ago saying, Rob, what am I going to do? I don't have refills on my hydroxychloroquine because there's no more in the country. There's no more.
Is that because they think it might work for coronavirus? So they don't prioritize people already getting a prescription?
No. So now they realize, oh, shit, now there's no more hydroxychloroquine anywhere. And so now they're going back to say, all right, the only way you can get hydroxychloroquine, which again, Tony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, you know, in medicine, we prescribe things. Medications are safe and effective.
Mm-hmm.
Safe and effective. We just don't throw shit out and see how it works on humans. Right. And so that's something I just want to dispel, too, is that we test things before they go to market for safety and then efficacy. So this friend of mine has no more. She has 30 pills of something that is life saving for her. No more. Number two, no job, no insurance, I mentioned. And then now yesterday, last night, one of my best friends, Mike Pinto, calls me up at 10:30 at night saying, hey, listen, my aunt who went to rehab for a general knee procedure, you know, knee replacement. Corona entered the rehab place. 36 people have now coronavirus. His aunt, who's 74 years old, is now in the ER. And you guys can go on right now. Look online. Elmhurst Hospital, which is in Jackson Heights, Queens, where I was raised, 13 people died last night. This woman, talk about rationing of care. They're saying to her, you're over 70. We're holding ventilators for people who are younger than you. All she went in for is a knee replacement.
Oh, my God.
So this is the kind of shit. And on top of it, the nurses and the doctors and the staff there are gowning up in trash bags, and there's no masks. A mask is 75 cents.
I heard that.
You know, and now they're saying that, you know what, just assume you're positive and just get to work, you know. And this is America. This is like, you know, one of the greatest countries in the world, if not the greatest country in the world, and you can't afford a fucking 75 cents mask, and somehow we are still waiting for it. So there's a lot of things. And then last but not least, you know, yesterday kind of hit me real because a dear chef, by the way, I'm also a chef, everyone. One of my chef friends passed, Floyd Cardoz. He was a chef and he died from coronavirus. And so that was the first time it really kind of hit home that someone I knew who was a family man, he has two sons. He was 59 years old. No real major medical problems, but he died. And so... I know I made it a little dark, and I know hopefully we can spend the next couple minutes really just – this is real shit. This is really –
But it's not dark. It's reality. People need to feel the reality of it. If we make everything puppy dogs and ice cream and try to make it so everyone just feels good, they avoid the true impact of
of life, of what's happening. You know, it's interesting that I was listening to another speaker yesterday saying, like, people kept telling her to keep things positive. And she said, at what point do we feel like just because someone's leading and speaking that they have to keep things positive, like a parent to protect us from the truth? And I'm happy that you don't do that. That's what I love about you, is you're just always very real. You're yourself. And you come with that queen's edge. I like that. You know, we don't have that as much in Canada.
Yeah. You know? Talking about a queen's edge, you know, our governor here, Governor Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, his brother is also on CNN. It's Chris Cuomo. Last night he brought something up that I thought was really good, because I know, you know, you and Julie both study positive psychology. And I don't know if there's Lewis is out there, you know, the great mastermind of positive psychology.
Lewis Alora.
Yeah. One of the things I want to mention is that he said, we need to think positive. And I thought about this, right? And he was like, oh, you know, yeah, you know, the death rate is not as severe. So let's talk about that, right? So the mortality of this is not as high as we suspected, which is great news. That's positive. But what he was alluding to is that we should all think we are positive. We have the disease. So think about that, right? So all of us collectively think we are infected. How will that change your behavior now?
Mm. I love that. Right? Because that'll make us stay in. That'll make us, like, you know, you have to think about, would you hang out with your parents right now, or anyone who's immune compromised?
Yeah. And I think that's something, you know, you likely, it's not about, you know, positivity. It's about thinking how we all affect each other. And that's really, I hope, as Julie always mentioned, the bless and the mess here is that we're all in this together. And all we're asking people to do is to stay home. Like, we're not telling people to go to war. We're just telling people to stay home for 2 weeks, for as long as this is, right? There's no, our president is not going to dictate when we go out. The virus will dictate when we go out, you know? And that's really something. So I want to answer some of the questions too, you know?
Yeah.
I see a lot of good questions down there.
One of the questions was, what is the timeline on a vaccine?
At least a year. I think.
Yeah,
it just takes time. And again, it has to be effective and safe. Safe, more important, right?
Yeah.
Because a vaccine, I'll just break down vaccines a little bit. So a vaccine is a micro dose of the thing that potentially can infect you, right? And so there's that safety, really important, because the last thing you want to do is cause a disease by giving a vaccine. And again, not everyone is eligible, because again, it goes back to that first part, the immune system. Right. If you're immunocompromised and you give a vaccine, the potential of it activating it is really high. And so the vaccine is really important. But I think what's really important now, at least in New York and other places that are really hot spots, we have to start thinking about, and it's true, you know, we have to get back to work. We have to get the economy going back again. We have to have some way that we can actually safely tell people, not by a hunch, as our president said, not, you know, I like Easter. We're going to go out in Easter. We have to safely put people back to work. And that is where what they call serology, blood testing, can happen. And so similar to some sort of antibody, we will develop an antibody. And you're starting to see that some of in the press right now, is that the people that have responded and recovered from coronavirus, their blood have antibodies. And that's what you're trying to do, right? Give someone else who has the disease an antibody.
So they transfuse their blood if they match?
Yeah, just technically it's called plasma. It's a plasma exchange, right? And so you give that person, the person's plasma who has recovered from coronavirus, to someone who is actively coronavirus. But that is also, you can actually test from your blood test if you have an antibody.
Oh,
so therefore, if you have an antibody,
then you know.
Which again, that test is not yet done yet, right? But once you have developed an immune response defined as an antibody that can be done through blood, you can actually say you will not get this coronavirus again. That doesn't mean that you can't get the flu or any other virus. It just, you won't get this virus again.
Yeah, my understanding of the length, and I wanted to, there's two questions that I want to make sure we get to. One, if you have mild symptoms, should you go to Emerge, but hold that one, or should you go to the hospital? And the other one, no, so you shouldn't. So we don't even have to, don't go to Emerge, don't overwhelm the system,
call your doctor.
Stay home, don't get people sick, call your doctor. Okay. Number two, if you have had it and you've recovered and you didn't even know, but you have, you know, the antibodies that you're talking about, the length of immunity, as far as I understand, is not certain yet, but it is thought to be maybe a year, maybe two.
I think probably lung. I think you can, yeah. So there's a couple of different things. There's called induced immunity, meaning that you get a vaccine. People older than 50 get, you know, the flu shot, perfect example, right? The flu shot has its pros and cons, right? The pros is that it prevents certain people from getting the flu if that year's strain of the virus that is causing the flu is in the cocktail.
Like matches the predicted, what they think is going to be, right? That's essentially what they do, exactly, is they prepare.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's why sometimes it's about anywhere between 30% to 70% effective, depending on what the cocktail is, right? Because you don't know, like we didn't know coronavirus was going to happen this year. And so if we did, we would have thrown that viral compound into the cocktail, right? And that's what's going to happen. So next year, we're going to be developing a cocktail that has this virus in it as a vaccine.
So, okay, so it will be preparing us in the future. We'll have this as part of the cocktail. Now, the other question is, if you've had it and you've recovered, are you contagious?
No.
Right. Okay. Now the other question was, if you've had it and you've recovered, can you go out? I like that sneaky little question. They're like, can I party? Am I allowed to go?
So technically you could, right? And that's what I'm proposing. I'm proposing that.
That's smart.
Yeah. So I'm proposing the fact is this, it's I would love for everyone to get tested, right? I think that's what South Korea did, right? But to think about the feasibility of that, it's probably not going to happen. And again, using the analogy of the genie is out of the bottle, right? Assuming that we are positive.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, how are we going to, as a society, say you're safe to go out and not infect anyone and go back to work? And the only way you really can do that safely is by, again, as a scientist, by having an objective measure of immunity. And that's where the serology antibody test happens.
So they can test for, you wouldn't test positive for COVID anymore. You test positive for having the antibodies.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly.
Because we can't. At this point, Mark, we just fucked up. Like it's just too late. We're not going to be truly understand the magnitude or the prevalence of this disease because we just don't, number one, have the testing available. Even in New York, you know, I do telemedicine. I have patients calling me saying I have fever. I have a little bit of shortness of breath. I have cough. You know, I need to get tested. And that's the other thing. I can't get tested. I can't. There's nowhere that I can tell someone to go get tested in New York City with 100% of certainty except for an emergency department.
So, yeah, because you're president. I get to say you're president.
I know.
You're president. I know. You're president. Expressed that anyone can get a test now. That's not true. That was total misinformation. I'm sure most people will forget that he said that, but
it's a throwback Thursday, you know, put it up, you know, today, you know.
No one
said it was a hoax
though.
Too, you know, he said it was a Democratic hoax when he first started, you know. And listen, I don't want to get into politics because ultimately
we don't have
the testing is it won't happen. We won't be able to test anyone. And then so that's part of the reason why we're trying to adhere to at least a 14-day self-quarantine, home quarantine, because at least there, that first wave, you know, the virus probably lasts anywhere, again, 2 to 14 days. So with some assurance, you can say that after 14 days, maybe 21 days, likely 28 days, you could probably have recovered from it. And you can assume, and I hate assuming in medicine, but you can assume that you're clear. But again, for me, I think when we're going to ask our you know, supermarket, like if we ask our society to get back to work, we have to make sure that it's safe to do that.
Yeah, agreed. You know? I was reading an interesting article that was the same article. I'll share it with you after, and I'll share it on my story for everyone watching. But it was talking about how in America and Canada, that what happened is because we've never been through something specifically like this, it's like, I've never experienced anything like this before is a common sentence from all of us, except for someone in healthcare. But if you were in Hong Kong, that was not the sentence because they've all been very prepared for this because they dealt with SARS. So they all know social isolation, shut down, everyone shuts down, and then they contain and they were set up for testing. So the testing thing, you're right, because when you test positive, then you get isolation, you get anyone they were in contact with, and you contain. Is there a social tracing?
It's called social tracing.
Social tracing.
So you catch you. You're patient zero, and then you try to find who you've been in touch with in the last couple of days. You know, the home swab. So that's coming, and so the home swab is coming, and now what they're trying to push to expedite. The other big problem is that we don't have enough protective equipment in our hospitals and our clinics, right? And so most people don't realize the magnitude of that problem, because each time you swab someone, you have to regown.
Wow. So there's not enough for that. So if you're swabbing and they're positive, fast enough.
Yeah, exactly. Because the test takes anywhere between three to 10 days to come back to currently.
I heard there's a 1-hour test that just got approved.
They are. But again, the approval and the dissemination of it, two different things. Again, we have enough stuff, but getting it to the frontline people is a problem. Now, the other thing is that there's a thing called the self-test. And so that's what they're trying to promote now, where you just simply pull up, show up, and you test yourself. So therefore, the provider doesn't have to regown each time.
In Vancouver, we have a drive-through one. So like for only frontline healthcare workers right now.
Yeah.
So,
and that's the other thing. If you're not really sick, and again, call your doctor, most doctors, if not all doctors, and I do, right? And so and that's one thing, again, positive here, is that I'm board certified to practice medicine in New Jersey, Manhattan, and in Massachusetts, because I have licenses in those countries, in those states. But because of the regulations right now, we are able to offer telemedicine across state lines, which is really brand new, because we're technically not licensed to practice in the U.S. We're licensed to practice in the country.
It's kind of weird, because your test itself is national.
Yeah.
And you would be allowed to practice medicine in Canada, you know, if you went and applied and did the things. So that's really fascinating. I have found that interesting about psychologists, too, that if their patient moves to another state, they can't stay with them. I'm like, but they just built a secure attachment with someone. Like, that goes against the whole premise of building a relationship. Like, for physicians, like I know in some of the research, it's not physicians that make the most mistakes that get sued the most. It's the ones who spend the least amount of time with their patients, the ones who are sort of mechanistic, which, again, there's limits to the healthcare system that make that sometimes real. So it's about that personal part, that humanness. Yeah. And that's why I love you. I mean, you're my local doctor when I go to New York. You've saved me a few times from an ear infection. Holy fuck, that was hell. Okay, so I have a couple, because I know that you're very much about the human experience too. And so I just wanted people to be mindful of, one, you talked about there's a pandemic of fear. And that fear causes us to go into fight, flight, freeze, which causes immune suppression. And so I'm curious, because I know that, one, this experience of being isolated, right? Because I am isolated, but I'm not, because I mean, you and I have FaceTimed a few times, you know, I FaceTimed with friends. I had a little dinner party with some friends the other day. So I feel it, but I'm not getting that touch.
Yeah.
And so what can people do because one, you have to hold the fear because it's real, but what practices can they do to be grounded and try to enliven their immune system? What supplements can they take? What type of stuff like that?
Sure. All right, great. So I think one of the things, you know, now, as you were saying that, I thought about like Virgil's classic quote is that, health is the greatest wealth.
Mm.
Right. And I think, you know, we are often panicked, you know, not only because of the actual virus that's happening it's also another panic of, oh shit, do I have a job? Oh shit, you know, what's going to happen to my rent? Do I need to pay my rent? We have all those other fears that are real again, and you have to hold that space, you know, which is really important. And so one of the things I say, and if I can, Mark, for like literally 3 minutes, just go through my fresh prescription.
Dude, okay? Fresh Med, my favorite company, my favorite doctors, your wife, one of my favorite humans.
Me too. And so holding that fear is really important. And then I think what happens, I think a lot of fear is control-based, right? And it's this lack of control, like what's going to happen to the virus? What's going to happen to my family? What's going to happen to my job? What's going to happen? And I say this is an opportunity for you to look inward and take control. And one of the models that FreshMed has is that self-care is the best form of healthcare. Again, self-care is the best form of healthcare. So don't wait for your doctor to take care of you. You take care of yourself. So therefore, the doctor doesn't have to do that much. He just has to supplement you, you know.
Preventative, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, when FRESH is an acronym for what we call the five ingredients of the five pillars of health. And it's food, relaxation, exercise, sleep, and happiness. And there's no better time than to dive into that. And so when it comes to food, you know, we talk about immunity. We talk about things that are really important to optimize our immunity. And so there are supplements. There's some studies about vitamin C, zinc, that are really popular right now. And there's some in terms of duration of viruses. Now, vitamin C and zinc hasn't been studied with coronaviruses, but in general, vitamin C and zinc have been shown to cut the duration of any viral infection.
Yeah,
I say instead of taking supplement, eat more vitamin C. You know, because I believe that food is medicine. And I think we should also.
What's the best source?
Citrus. Oranges. So load up on your citrus, oranges,
lemons, limes,
right, and incorporate that into your cooking. That's the other thing. When it comes to food, this is no better time. I always say you hear the adage, "Food is medicine," but I also think cooking is medicine because right now
it is very meditative.
Exactly, but we don't trust anyone with our food system right now. And so the only way you control what we're putting in our mouth 100% is by you designing what you're going to eat. And so for those people that don't know how to cook, I would love, you know, this is the time that get into the kitchen and start experimenting. I like my four S's. I call them soups, smoothies, shakes, and stir fries. You don't need to be a Michelin star chef. You can just start playing around, get into the kitchen, open up a cookbook. We all have cookbooks. We're all watching TV cooking shows. You know, we spend 6 hours watching the cooking show and we spend less than 1 hour cooking. It's an interesting sociological phenomenon that's happening right now.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Number R, relaxation. If you never learn how to meditate, start learning how to meditate now. I love, on Instagram, there's a free public health site that I am a global brand ambassador for. It's called the Monday Campaigns. It's called Meatless Monday, but also De-Stress Monday. So De-Stress Monday has these beautiful,
Monday.
Yeah, they have beautiful gifts that, again, it's about breath control and breath work. And it's really simple. And remember, every 3 seconds, intrusive thought comes into your mind, especially when you're stressed. They probably drop down to 2. It's normal. Accept it. And then clear it. And then go back to your breath. And De-Stress Monday has really interesting gifts that you don't have to think about how you're doing it. If you haven't picked up yoga is important. I bring up yoga because yoga, I call it a moving meditation. And for those
for exercise, right?
E for exercise, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm bringing it old school, right? Because our gyms are closed.
Yes.
And so I'm doing push-ups, sit-ups, dips, jumping jacks. I'm bringing it back to the calisthenic days of the 1980s.
Which HIIT training is like incredibly good for you because it's short bursts. It's so good for you. You retain a high metabolism throughout the day. It increases your immunity. I mean, exercise, come on, people. If there's ever a time, now's the time.
You have to. And that's the other thing. I often hear, just Marcus, like you're leading me right into the next one. S, sleep.
I love you.
Right. And so when you think about sleep, people are like, I don't have time to sleep. Man, if you don't have a job, and now respect that a lot of people are out there, healthcare workers, supermarket, grocery stores, pharmacists, frontline workers, they're out there working. So again, you know, mad love, mad respect to them.
Yeah,
but
so much love.
If you don't, take a nap. Nap. Like, this
what
is
a permission
the time
to have a nap. Hey, like that's. I love that
sleep
we have
in
to get you to prescribe it. Can you prescribe these things, please? Do you have a pad? If it comes on your pad with writing we can't read, because that would be very physician of you, it's like sleep. It's like, what? What does that say?
Well, you know, that's kind of known for, right? I write prescriptions for this kind of stuff. 7 to 8 hours. Those that people that sleep less than 6 hours a night have a 13% increased risk of dying. So if you need to catch up on your sleep, do it now. You have permission to do this. Last but not least is H, happiness, right? Mm-hmm. And this is where I think you and Julie and me and others vibe on, right? And this is why we are friends, because other people matter, right? Chris Peterson says it best.
Yes.
And oftentimes, you know, this is where we talk about physical distancing, not social distancing and isolation, because surround yourself with people that really are important to you. I don't talk to you about this because you're the king of it. And oftentimes, Julie mentions finding the bless in the mess, because there's always some sort of bless in this mess. And so that's kind of my prescription, my Fresh Five prescription for self-care.
So for the people watching this and listening, because people will be listening to this too, where can people find Dr. Rob Brehm?
So you can find me in New York City. You can find me on the web. You can find me on Instagram. No, you can find me at freshmednyc.com. On all handles, Twitter, Instagram. And something I'm really excited about is this last thing I want to talk about, because one of the things that we, and you kind of made me and Julie think about this, is that, you know, I see a lot of patients, I take care of a lot of people, and a lot of them don't live in New York City.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I love New York because everyone seems to come through, right?
That's true. It's great.
So they kind of come, we hang out in my beautiful office and my beautiful clinic, and then we can do the testing and you go home and you can figure it out. But then the ripple effect of it, and two things I'm really excited about, is that about 6 months ago, a supermarket company, which now are our frontline heroes too, right? Because they're out there every day.
Oh my gosh,
loading
yes.
that shit up, you know? And I've dedicated myself to one company that's is been open throughout this whole time. And I'm their kind of on-call doctor because of the fears of coronavirus. We started an online educational program I call FreshMedU. It's called FreshMed University, FMU. It's all about you. It's anywhere between a 4-week course and a 26-week course, where we introduce this fresh concept of medicine over the first 4 weeks, and then deep dive into the art and science that my wife and I think really have an interesting perspective, because I can give you the opinion and the art, but also the science behind all of these modalities. So that's really exciting. And Julie and I just got off the phone yesterday with a publisher, Simon Schuster, that has picked up our book.
Yes. Congratulations.
So I know, man. We're so excited about that.
And your wife can be found at Finding My Way Home.
Finding My Way Home. And her iBook called Positively Psyched. Where again, it's really diving into the 26 letters of the alphabet and finding health and well-being in each of those letters.
Well, Rob, I want to extend a giant thank you to, first, all of the frontline healthcare workers, first responders like yourself, and all the, as you said, the grocery store workers, the people who are making the world turn while other people are sitting still, ideally.
Yeah,
and that's such a gift. I'm so grateful. So thank you to you. I love you. You're one of my favorite people. And I'm so grateful that you took the time to share this knowledge so that we all are being informed. Rob, thank you so much. Everyone go follow Rob at FreshMedNYC so you can stay up to date on all the fresh stuff, and also on information around what's happening now, because I've been watching your stories and stuff. You keep people informed on what's going on and what's the best ways to exist in this crazy world right now.
Awesome, brother. Yeah, and listen, thank you so much for the opportunity. And let's get together physically once this gets over.
For your
family as well, brother.
You too. Love you, bro.
All right, love, bro. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If this episode resonated with you, one of the best ways to support the show is to go subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any more. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, or share the episode with your community on Instagram or whatever social place you like to hang out. This helps get it into more people's ears, and I'm so grateful for your support always. Thanks again for tuning in. Much love.